The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder where God is or could he even exist with all that's going on in the news. Honestly, it seems like every 2 days, there's something. There's police shootings in Dallas, police shootings in Louisiana. There's terrorist attacks in Nice, France. It goes on and on and on. Well, the good news is despite all this, God is still on his throne. And here, I'll prove it to you right now. If God were not still on his throne, how could I have a guest as good as my good friend, Jim Barrier? Jim, welcome to our program.
Wow, there's an intro. I'll try to live up to that. and you know what, Bob? I have a lot of things. I will get animated in a little bit, but I have a heavy heart because as you mentioned, it's just every other day there's something atrocious. And I think we've become numb, we've become callous, because it's even happening on our soil. And we're not even, we're in such a state of shock that it just doesn't faze us now, it seems. It's just every other day there's a terrible thing. Either there's a bombing somewhere, there's police shootings, it just is weighing very, very heavy on me. And so I know we have some things to talk about tonight, but I just wanted you to know that those things are just hard for me to shirk off and put aside and to ignore. It's just very, very difficult times we're in right now.
Yeah, well, they weigh on me too, my friend, although my mind does other mental gymnastics because I think it would be so easy for President Obama one of these days to just declare martial law. In fact, if Trump wins the election, and I think there's a good chance now that he might, there will be riots all over the streets. We're going to see riots this week during the convention. And there'll be riots all over the country. And I could see Obama stand up and say, I gave the American people a chance to vote in the right person, but I cannot sit back in good conscience and watch this. I'm not saying he would get away with that. I'm saying there's nothing about this man and his ego which makes me think that he isn't at least considering it. And he's already done such similar things with executive orders. So it's not just the horrible tragedies. It's the way they could get exploited and perhaps make things even worse.
Yeah, and I'm not the only one that feels this way, but I feel he has an awful lot of ownership of the responsibility that's led to these problems. He has not been the unifying president. He's been the dividing president.
Oh, absolutely. He got involved in that Ferguson thing, even though his own Justice Department finally exonerated the police officer. They were hoping not to. When Trayvon Martin was shot, he gets up and says, "This could have been my son." He has driven a train through racial divide. And the ironic thing is, even though I didn't vote for Obama, a lot of people did. That's how he got elected. Doesn't that say something about how at least the high majority of our country has moved beyond racism? That here we've had a black president for the last 8 years and people still act like there's all these racial problems. Well, there are racial problems being stroked by civil rights activists that are trying to keep them going. The Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons, and yes, the Barack Obamas. And now, I'm of the belief that whoever does the shooting is the only one responsible. I would never want to see hate speech laws passed. However, having said that, there has been a lot of inflammatory rhetoric, and it is connected.
Yeah, I believe it is. And so I don't know where we're headed. I'm so curious about this upcoming election and the convention. Starts Monday, doesn't it?
Yep, starts tomorrow.
Yeah, wow. I'm concerned. I'm watching to see which direction the nation goes. I'm very concerned to see what the Republican Party will do, because the Republican Party has divisions among itself.
Well, yeah, they're, I heard that the attempt to change the rules and get rid of Trump, which we talked about the last time you were on the program,
yeah.
It sounds like that went belly up. But they, but like we both predicted, they did make the attempt. So I think Trump's just rising so much in the polls, and his selecting the running mate that he did helped, because he picked a real diehard conservative. So
real conservative.
Yeah.
So, well, I think there probably were some that were smart enough to say, you know, if we screw this up, we will never, ever get another president elected with this party.
It would have been the end of the Republican Party. And again, if Hillary wins, it'll be the end of the Republic. Because like we've said, all that matters is who the next Supreme Court justices are going to be.
And I'm kind of hoping that Trump wins, because Ginsburg said she'd go back to New Zealand. And
yeah,
she can take all of the movie stars with her. They can all go to Canada.
They always say that. Did any of them ever really leave? They always promise to leave. They never actually do.
I had friends that left in the 60s because of the Vietnam War, and they moved to Canada, but that was a different thing.
I can't remember who it was now, but not long ago, a famous actress said she'd move out of the country if Trump got elected, and Trump gets on the horn. And he says, that should be the greatest argument to elect me right here and there. You know, most presidential candidates wouldn't have the brass to say something like that.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. So we will see. We will see what's going to happen. So, I wanted to go into some things tonight. I want to make a comment. I have a lot of friends of different persuasions, and a lot of young people I know have said this. I was pulling for Bernie Sanders. You know, remember Bernie, the guy who's not an insider, who's anti-establishment, who's now right behind Hillary? Remember that guy?
Yeah, Bernie, the guy who at the end of the Monopoly game says the winner needs to take all the money and divvy it up so that everybody can be a winner.
Yeah. Well, and they'd say, I want Bernie. I'd say, why? I said, because I think we should have free education. And that was part of the rhetoric that I heard a lot, free education. And then it occurred to me, I'm a little slow. You might have thought of this a long time ago, but we have free education all the way through grade 12.
Yeah, we do.
How's that working out for you?
Well, when's the last time you met a recent college graduate? How's that working out? It's not exactly the most stellar education that they're getting these days. Maybe still in a lot of the sciences, but the humanities, I wouldn't pay a plug nickel for that education.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about that. The great Ronald Reagan, I know you remember him, had a quote.
Well, Nancy and I were in the White House for several years.
You know, very good. He had a quote in one of his books, and he was actually quoting the great Malcolm Muggeridge, who was a British journalist. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
But, I have not heard of him.
Well, he was a brilliant guy. He was one of those guys that was, you know, he was kind of like a Edward R. Murrow or something in that country. And then he had a conversion experience, and it was kind of like the C.S. Lewis thing. Here's this voice in Britain, and all of a sudden he's espousing Christianity. But Malcolm had said this, and Reagan quoted him. He said, I calculate that at the precise moment it takes the entire gross national product to pay for education, we will achieve a 100% illiteracy rate.
That just about says it.
Great, great line. And so free education, what has it got us? You know, we've been dumbed down so bad. We have really a horrible illiteracy problem in our society, and worse than that for me is innumeracy. That's the mathematical counterpart to illiteracy. Kids cannot add and subtract. They can't count. They can't do simple math that we were supposed to do back in elementary.
Well, because they have calculators and iPhones that do it all for them.
Yeah, I went in the other day. My wife and I went into a restaurant and we ordered lunch, and all I had was a $50 bill. I gave it to the kid. Well, he thought it was a 20, so he puts it in the register, and he counts out my change, and he gives me change for a 20, and I said, that was a 50.
Well, Jim, he probably didn't know that numbers go up as high as 50.
Well, here's the problem. I said, just give me another $30, and he said, I can't do that. I said, I gave you a 50, you gave me change for 20, so just give me 30, and we're even. He wouldn't. It took two managers to come.
All he'd have to do is count, 20, 25.
No, he can't do that. Oh. And the machine was already, you know, had already done its deal. It took two managers to come and assist this kid before I finally got my change back for a $50 bill.
Yeah, it just staggers the imagination.
Serious trouble here. And it occurred to me, we were talking this morning in church, and somebody made the comment about higher education. I said, now there's an oxymoron.
Look at what's going on now. They have special rooms, special comfort rooms where people can be handed a teddy bear and a pillow because they saw a sign saying Donald Trump for president and they couldn't handle it. So they needed to be comforted with a teddy bear. And these are our future leaders at a college campus. That makes you want to pull your hair out.
It's pretty scary. And I can sense that we're going to come up on a station break pretty soon here. But one of the things that I want to talk about, as far as the education system and as far as what's going on, is the rewriting of history.
Which was predicted by George Orwell brilliantly in the novel 1984.
Yeah, and which was a long, that came and went, and we're there. I mean, Big Brother is everywhere. You're being watched. You're being listened to. And I'm not just paranoid. The technology is out there. And if I'm on the list of being a suspected enemy, they can find everything about me that they want to know, and they can listen in on my conversations, and it's crazy stuff.
It's not about burning books anymore. They can just delete computer files because the day will come where everything will be digitized. So it's getting easier to rewrite and delete history.
What are books?
Yeah, a lot of people don't even know what books are even today.
And that was another one, H.G. Wells, The Time Machine. You know, when he got into the future, they didn't have books.
And remember in Wells' version of the future, the people were stupider? It was
exactly.
You would have thought they'd have been brilliant, and they were the dumbest people he'd ever met, and that was the future.
They were being raised like cattle, yeah. And I grew up reading all of those things. I read all the Orwell, all the Huxley, all the H.G. Wells, all of that stuff. And so it's probably why I'm so cynical.
Okay, well, I'll let you be more cynical when we return.
Now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. It's good to be back with you. Mark Boobian filled in for me last week, and I want to thank you. He did his usual great job. I do, however, have a bone to pick with my substitute co-host. Every time he fills in for me, he announces that I'm away at Disneyland. I want to set the record straight. I was not at Disneyland. I love Disneyland. Many times when I've been away, I have been at Disneyland. But Disneyland's become Mark's default button. And instead of bothering to ask me where I'm going to be, he just announces where I am. We were on a vacation. I've been married 1 year to the beautiful Dana Siegel. And we were out celebrating our anniversary. We took a trip up the coast. We went to Monterey and Carmel and Santa Cruz and Big Sur and had a wonderful time, stayed in a lot of hotels, a lot of memories. We were not at Disneyland, so I want to make that very clear. And I don't know what I'm going to have to do the next time Mark substitutes for me. I'm going to have Nick hold up a cue card for him or something. So, all right. But anyway, today's co-host is my good friend Jim Barriere.
Did you go to Dana Point on that trip?
We saw Dana Point. Yeah, there's a lot of things named after Dana.
Of course. Well, yeah. Oh, my. Well, you know, that's a lovely part of the country. I've been the entire PCH from San Diego to Canada.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I've been up to Canada, not along the coast the whole way, but I did drive it. I did drive from San Diego up all the way to Portland.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty long trip. Beautiful, beautiful place. And there's nothing wrong with Disneyland, Bob.
I love Disneyland. That's not the problem. It's just I don't want people to think that every time I'm away from the mic, I'm at Disneyland. There are other reasons why I'm away occasionally.
So yeah, there could be. Well, my church thinks that whenever I'm gone, I'm in Las Vegas, and so try to figure that out.
You know, somebody asked me once. I was a guest speaker at a church, and I guess it was a small church, and a couple had gone to Las Vegas and had gambled. Mm-hmm. So I guess it was the big to-do. It was the big news. So as a guest speaker, they kind of put me on the spot, and they asked if gambling was a sin. I hesitated for a moment. I said, well, I guess that just depends on whether you win or lose. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I get that question, and I, of course, I take a more of a theological point of view, and I tell them, you know, I can think of a couple of instances where they cast lots in the Bible.
Yeah.
This is basically the same as rolling dice, you know.
Well, and of course, the soldiers gambled for Christ's clothes, so gambling's very biblical.
But when they had to replace Judas, that's how they picked Matthias.
Yeah, that is exactly. And some people think that might have gone back to the Ermin and Thurman. And
I was going to bring that up.
I think that was pronounced Thumman. I said Thurman.
Yeah.
I pronounced that wrong.
He'd say, bring me the ephod. And his vest had those thumbs in it. He'd roll bones to see if the nation's going to war.
Yeah. Not the best ways to discover the will of God. Sometimes the Bible just tells us what people did without recommending that's what everybody should do.
Exactly. That's the problem. People go, well, look, they did that. You know, well, it was kind of goofy.
Yeah, well, Gideon put out a fleece. I'll put out a fleece. Well, that's the way God talked to Gideon. Doesn't mean that's the way he's going to talk to you.
Yeah, in fact, I think God kind of humored him on that just to make him see how silly he was. But now, we recently celebrated the 4th of July, and it's come to my mind that just as we talk about Easter and Christmas and the religious holidays, and many people, secular people and young people, have no idea what those holidays are anymore, what they're really about. They don't know about the resurrection of Christ, and they don't know that the Christmas story, even though he probably most certainly was not born in December, and there's a long thing that you can do. You'd have to take a look at his relatives, John the Baptist's parents, and when that whole thing was taking place. You do the math. Jesus probably was born in September, but we celebrate Christmas, but it's become about lights and trees and presents and Santa Claus, and Easter is about chocolate bunnies and eggs. And so we mock that, and we talk about how people are so uneducated. But the 4th of July... most people have no idea what that's about. I mean, you and I do because we're old and we went to school and they taught us this stuff. And so I addressed this recently in church, and I wanted to revisit that tonight. And if you'll bear with me, I just want to read some familiar words to you.
Okay.
About the Declaration of Independence. And it starts off this way: when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the public bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to this separation. And then it goes on, and the Declaration of Independence begins. And it was their intent to separate themselves from the King of England. I know you know that, but I'm saying this for our listening audience.
You're saying this for the sake of those who think the Declaration of Independence means a comfort room with a pillow out on the campus.
Yeah, or, you know, fireworks and a day off work and hot dogs. and I certainly do all of those things, but it's a much deeper thing, just as Christmas and Easter are for the Christian. Now, here's some of the things that they were protesting. These are the reasons the founding fathers made this declaration. I'm going to read these things. Now, this was concerning the King of England, but I'm going to read them without mentioning any names. Just listen to some of this. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and
it's already having a familiar tone with me, Jim.
Yeah. The most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend them. There's more. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing to his assent to the laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount of payment for their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution, and has acknowledged and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation, for imposing taxes on us without our consent. And then it goes on and says, a prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people.
All hail King Obama.
Isn't that just, I mean, it's
well, it
eerie.
Sounds just
it's
like him, but what's really eerie is we elected this king. The colonists, at least, didn't have any choice. King George was already their king. We elected King Obama and got exactly what we deserved.
Isn't it just amazing the parallels, though? They're the abuse
absolutely.
Of power?
Absolutely.
Might be time for some more declarations.
Yeah, you bet. Hold with me over the break.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle, so when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Looking for a new book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a 6-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show with Jim Barrier.
Hey. Now, Bob, are you familiar with or have you had David Barton on your program?
I have had David Barton on as a guest on my program. He's excellent. Wonderful. It was many years ago that I had him. You could still find him in my radio archives on my website, though.
Awesome. I had the privilege of going back to Washington, D.C. for a pastor's conference, and David was the leader of that conference.
Was this recently?
This was a couple of years ago.
Okay, okay.
With the Wall Builders Foundation.
Right.
It was profound. The things that he reveals or uncovers or just tells us that have been hidden from the media's presentation and in public education. And there's a great thing he does on his tour. He goes in the rotunda in the Capitol building, and there are these eight paintings, huge paintings along the walls. And almost every one of them is a portrayal of a religious service. There's a baptism, there's a Bible study, it's all Christian stuff in these paintings in the Capitol Dome.
That's wonderful.
They used to hold church services there.
Well, you know, there's a lot of revival going on in Washington. Pastor Jim Garlow of Skyline Church has been involved. There's a lot of Bible studies and church services being held with congressmen. This is giving me some hope. In fact, when Trump gave his speech where he was announcing his running mate Pence, he mentioned the Johnson Amendment. I don't know how many of our listeners are aware of that, but this idea that churches aren't allowed to talk about politics, that's not actually found in the Constitution. That law is only as old as when Lyndon Johnson was running for Senate. Churches were speaking out against him. So after he became a senator, knowing he was going to run for re-election, he passed this amendment that didn't allow it. Of course, it's never followed accurately because liberal churches will get up and support liberal candidates all the time, but they really clamp down when conservatives try. But here we have a presidential candidate with the guts to get up and say, I'm going to repeal the Johnson Amendment. Of course, you better appoint a few justices also, or that repeal will get overturned by the courts. But I'm finding it very refreshing, refreshing. I'm starting to have some hope for what might happen, short of Obama declaring martial law at the last minute and raiding the game.
A guarded hope, I would say, a guarded hope. Well, some of the things I garnered from David Barton's work are some quotes from the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And I just want to read a few of these if I may. Okay. I'll tell you who they are after I read the quote, because some of them will surprise you. The general principles on which the fathers achieved independence were the general principles of Christianity.
One has to be Nancy Pelosi. You can't fool me, Jim.
That I then believed and now believe that those general principles of Christianity are as eternal and immutable as the existence and attributes of God. John Adams.
Yeah.
Signer of the Bill of Rights. Here's a good one. I conceive we cannot better express ourselves than by humbly supplicating the supreme ruler that the confusions that are and have been among those nations may be overruled by promoting and speedily bringing in the holy and happy period when the kingdoms of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ may be everywhere established and the people willingly bow to the scepter of him who is the Prince of Peace. Samuel Adams. And I thought he just made beer. Here's a good one. I'm going to give this away. I have heard people say, and they say it just emphatically, well, Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson were atheists.
Yeah, that's a bunch of malarkey.
Listen to what Ben Franklin says. As to Jesus of Nazareth, my opinion of whom you particularly desire, I think the system of morals and his religion as he left them to us the best the world saw or is likely to see. Ben Franklin, atheist.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons people say that about Franklin and Jefferson is they say, well, the men were deists. And a deist today is somebody who does believe in God. I don't know if anybody could seriously claim they were atheists. But a deist today is somebody who believes in God, but a God who doesn't involve himself in our personal prayers.
Exactly.
But well, Franklin talked so much about providence, you realize that there was a different kind of deist in those days. In those days, a deist was somebody who denied the Trinity. So it is true that Franklin and Jefferson probably wouldn't pass our litmus test as an evangelical Christian, but they did believe in providence, and they did absolutely believe in a God who involved himself in human affairs.
Listen to what Thomas Jefferson says. The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend to all the happiness of man. The practice of morality being necessary for the well-being of society. God has taken care to impress its precepts so indelibly on our hearts that they shall not be effaced by the subtleties of our brain. We all agree in the obligation of the moral principles of Jesus, and nowhere will they be found delivered in greater purity than in his discourses. Thomas Jefferson, deist, ladies and gentlemen.
These guys must just be turning in their grave to see the Harry Reids and Nancy Pelosi's that are filling their shoes now.
It's just shocking to me what has happened in a really short period of time. Can I give a few more founding fathers?
Sure, absolutely.
We have time. Okay, here's one. I now make it my earnest prayer that God would most graciously be pleased to dispose us all to do justice, love mercy, and demean ourselves with that charity, humility, and pacific temper of mind, which were the characteristics of the divine author of our blessed religion. He was quoting Micah 6:8. George Washington, father of our country, said that.
Yeah, and George Washington had also, I don't remember the exact words of the quote, but he had predicted that the day the nation turns away from God would be the beginning of the downfall of our nation.
In the chain of human events, the birthday of this nation is indissolubly linked with the birthday of the Savior. The Declaration of Independence laid the cornerstone of human government upon the first precepts of Christianity, John Quincy Adams.
Yeah, where's
the separation of church and state here?
They did. There was no such thing in their minds.
Yeah. I know. And here's one. Now, this guy's famous for saying, give me liberty or give me death. But Patrick Henry also said, the great pillars of all government and of social life are virtue, morality, and religion. This is the armor, my friend, and this alone that renders us invincible. So, some of these things are have just left us. They're out of the history books now.
Yeah, well, it's because they're not studying history. Like you said at the beginning of the show, it's now historical revision. We'll be right back.
Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
We'll be right back.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Oh, how the mighty nations have fallen. We're talking today about America. Jim, welcome back to our program.
Thanks. Now, that was all food for thought and a refresher course, and for some maybe a revelation that the Founding Fathers actually were, in fact, very devout people. And one of the things that David Barton taught us, of all of those men that signed the Declaration of Independence, the vast majority of them were ordained or at least attended seminary. They were very, very Christian.
Yeah, when people say that we're not a Christian nation, they don't know what they're talking about. We are a nation that doesn't mandate that you become a Christian. But right. We are a nation with a constitution based upon Judeo-Christian principles. And there's been a lot of providence in the forming of our country. A lot of people don't realize that John Adams and Thomas Jefferson both died on the 4th of July on the same day. Mm-hmm. And there had been a lot of enmity between them that they had softened later in life. Each was going to attend a celebration, and each was comforted to hear that the other was going to be there. They both died. Things like that aren't a coincidence. It just shows the hand of God on our country.
Yeah, but it seems very, very clear to me, if people will just do their homework, if you just study and learn these things, it's very clear to me that those people that started this great nation did have a very solid foundation of a Christian belief. And we have to use the term Judeo-Christian belief. There weren't a whole lot of Jews in the country yet at that point. They were primarily Christian-thinking people, even your deists of, Franklin and Jefferson, if we want to have to label them as that. They believed the words of Jesus. They believed that Jesus was a real person. They believed in the principles of Christianity. And to a person, and I only read about half the quotes I had here, to a person, these men believed that they were founding something based on the teachings of Christ and the wisdom of God. But that has eluded us, and so now we're kind of a nation floating around. And I guess if I can segue here, because we are, it seems like I say this every 4 years, but we're in the midst of the most critical presidential election in our history.
Well, it does become more critical each time, and this time it's as critical as it can possibly be.
Well, we are at critical mass, if you will, and I fear we hit the slippery slope 7 years ago or 8 years ago or whatever all this, really began to erode. And I don't know how you get back up the hill other than, we've talked about this a lot before, other than returning to what those founding fathers understood, a true embrace of the Christ, the Savior, and the God who sent him. And the wisdom and teachings that are found in the scriptures. And I think a revival, a spiritual awakening, whatever you would like to call it, because I've been to the revivals in my lifetime, and they're not revivals. They're nice, fun meetings. They're good things, lots of emotion, lots of fun stuff, but they're not revivals like the Welsh revivals and the New England revivals and the times in history that were earth-shaking and changed whole societies. We haven't had that, and we need that.
Bob. Yeah, and sometimes a political movement can follow a spiritual revival, and it should be in that order, because the Revolutionary War followed the Great Awakening. And probably if we had not had the Great Awakening, we would not have had the Revolutionary War.
Absolutely. The abolitionist movement and the Underground Railroad traces its roots to the Finney revivals in New England, because he preached against slavery, and it was Christians who led the way.
And yet look at all the, you talk about historical revision. It's now taught in our universities that the Bible is a book that promotes slavery. I had an atheist on my show one time tell me that. I said, 3 places in the New Testament is slavery condemned. He goes, oh, I don't think so. This guy was a scholar, a Greek scholar, and he did not know that the New Testament condemned slavery. It is true that the New Testament wasn't going to ask slaves to have a violent uprising. They didn't want a violent revolution on their hands. But the apostles spoke against slavery. There were peaceful ways for releasing a slave. The apostles told slaves, if you have an opportunity, obtain your freedom, do so. They encouraged masters to release their slaves. And you're right. The abolitionist movement in America and the abolitionist movement in England started by Christians, Wilberforce, Charles Finn. And that has been lost. And look at the way Satan just turns it around. This book, which spoke against slavery, is now known as the book that condones slavery.
There's an awful lot of lying going on out there. Now, there's nothing new about politicians lying, but I'm sick to death of what the majority of the media is perpetrating on the American people. Of course, the Salem Broadcast Network is exempt from this.
Naturally.
but you know, you guys are in the minority. You're in a very
we absolutely are.
Minority. And people just saying things, just blurting this stuff out. And then the people hear the stuff and they just believe it. And it really troubles me with young people, because I talk and they say things and I say, where did you get that? Well, I heard it, you know, somebody, you know, so-and-so said it, this politician, this media personality said it. You know, most people get their information from movie stars and rock stars.
Most college students get their news from The Daily Show.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen it. You know, they listen to...
And they get their political theory from their professors.
Yeah. And so check your sources. But it's easier to let someone else do your thinking for you. And if they say things that are easier for you to live with, then you'll embrace it. I think one of the biggest problems in our culture is that people don't want to face the truth because it means they'll have to change. And I say that, you know, now you've dealt way more with dealing with atheists. I have a lot of conversations with atheists, and I really enjoy doing that. And one of the things that I'll say, I'll take an approach like this. Well, now, if there were a God like I'm describing, and if the things in the Bible were true for the most part, would you have to change something in your life? And they'll kind of snicker or whatever. And if they're honest, they'll say, well, sure. And I'll say, well, then really the problem isn't science, is it? The problem is morals.
Yeah, and occasionally somebody will admit this. Like I was talking to a student one time in a fraternity. He says, well, you know, from the time that the New Testament was written to the earliest copy of a manuscript, we have a couple hundred years. I said, hey, from the time of Aristotle to the earliest manuscript, we have 1,400 years. He says, Aristotle isn't asking me to change my life. I said, thank you for being so intellectually honest. We'll be right back. Buying a home? Selling a home? It goes without saying that you need somebody experienced and skilled, but you also need a realtor you can trust, a man who will look out for your interests as if they were his own. This is Bob Siegel, here to steer you the right direction with just two words, Fred Felduti. Fred works with Realty Executives All Area, a company that has sold thousands of homes locally since 1994. Putting your home up for sale or selling a home can be stressful, filled with decisions you never anticipated. So put your mind at ease and call Fred Felduti. He sold my home for me at top price. Every step along the way, I benefited from his wisdom and a very generous usage of his time. By the way, Fred Felduti received the Executive of the Year Award for 2014. What? You say that was a couple of years ago? Listen, wise guy, do you want to mark the calendar or do you want somebody to sell your home for you? Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Felduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-401-2150. That's 619-401-2150 or fredfelduti.com.
Bob Siegel's new fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is now available on Kindle, Nook, and in print copy. Check out some of the wonderful customer reviews on Amazon.com. Reviews such as this one. Wow, what an incredible story. Well written, believable characters. The story takes twists and turns that keep surprising the reader. Although it is written from the perspective of a preteen, it is most appealing to an adult. Takes one back to those feelings and longing for adventure. I can't wait for the sequel. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We'll be right back.
back to the Bob Siegel Show with Jim Barrier. Jim, we're down already to our last segment.
I know. It happens every time, doesn't it? By the way, and this is my disclaimer, I do not get paid to be on this show. Friends, buy the dangerous Christmas ornament. Buy several copies and use them for gifts. Before you know it, we're going to be in the Christmas shopping season. It is a great book. It makes a great gift. So that's my plug.
That's very nice of you to say that. You've plugged
my... Well,
that's why I keep having you on, even though I'm not paying you. you're kind of paying me in a way.
Oh, no, I will pay you honor to whom honor is due. Now,
well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So closing here tonight, we've been all over the board, but that's what happens when you and I talk. By the time I'm on your show again, the Republican convention will have been history, and the process will be started, and we'll be on the road, whatever's going to happen there. I've already seen Hillary and the pundits have just been viciously attacking the illustrious governor of the state of Indiana. And what's going to happen when we come out of that thing? And hopefully there won't be any bloodshed outside or riots, but there's no guarantee on that. What do you think? Do you have any sense of or prediction of what's going to happen coming out of there? Will the party be unified? Will there be some hope? What's your gut feeling?
My gut feeling is that the party will be unified. And even though horrible things are going on with these police shootings and constant terrorist attacks, they are better for Trump's campaign. That's a horrible thing to say. But we know that Obama and Hillary did not keep this country safe. She was our Secretary of State. He was our president. It's just better for Trump, I think, because he picked Pence, Governor Pence, as his running mate. I think there is going to be some unity in the party. The George Bushes still won't go to the convention, but I don't think that's going to matter. And I think there's a really good chance that Trump's going to win, and I think Obama's going to try to do something to subvert that. I do believe, unfortunately, though, that Obama winning will bring riots all over the land, and there'll be a lot of riots this coming week. I did hear something kind of heartening, though, aside from the law being on top of it. There's a bunch of motorcyclists, a bunch of vets, and they're saying they're going to go and they're going to just stand there and they're going to be a wall between the people and the police. That's what maybe needs to happen. We need to have enough protesters on the other side, not to be violent, but to be there as an antidote to the violence. But, and you know, and I got to say this, Jim, I am so sick and tired of the Black Lives Matter movement. And I know somebody can quote me out of context, so let me just quickly say, of course I believe Black Lives Matter. I believe all lives matter, but that's the problem. It's not politically correct anymore to say that all lives matter. You've got to only say that Black Lives Matter. That movement was started because of Ferguson. That policeman was exonerated. Most of the policemen in these high-profile cases have been exonerated, in some cases by black judges. But it's completely ignored. And when a movement had its inception in falsehood, I'm sorry, I know there's a lot of innocent people that innocently go along with it, but I am so sick and tired of that movement. We're going to see it this week outside the convention. They're going to scream and they're going to call Trump a racist. And, you know, you and I've talked about Trump before. We both have a lot of problems with Trump. But he's not a racist. Or if he is, he hasn't said a racist. Things he said have been misconstrued, quoted out of context. He does say stupid things. He speaks without a filter. The man has not uttered one single racist word. Nobody who's worked with him over the years has viewed him as a racist or viewed him as being anti-feminist. But that's going to be the spin. And they're saying all the same things about Pence already. And the guy's about as mild-mannered as they come. I mean, you practically fall asleep listening to him. He's the opposite of Donald Trump. They're saying all the same things again. Oh, the war on women. I'm so sick and tired of these slogans and pithy sayings. War on women. Black Lives Matter. It's bumpkin for the masses. It's sound bites for people who don't know how to think.
And it's effective.
It's very effective because we're a nation now that lives on Twitter.
Yeah. You know, I just saw today, apparently one of the officers that was killed in Baton Rouge was a black man.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. So three of the police officers that were accused of the guy that died inside the police van, three of them were black. And it finally was, these cases are now getting thrown out of the courts, although they're being tried one at a time. I think they have another three to go. It's ridiculous. In a lot of these cities, the mayor is black, the chief of police is black. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
But sadly, as you said, people believe what they read on Twitter and Facebook and wherever else. And you and I are on Facebook. We'll admit that. But I'm concerned at where we're going, but I'm going to watch and see what happens with the convention and more kind of see what the response is. You know, personally, I think it might be a bonus that Bush is not attending because there's so much anti-Bush sentiment. It might speak to some of those independents and people who are tired of the same old thing and go, well, if Bush isn't there, maybe I ought to pay attention to this guy.
That does remind me of one other thing, though. One bad piece of rap that Bush did get when we kept hearing about there were no weapons of mass destruction. There absolutely were. I encourage anybody to go to my website. I have documented this with an article. They found weapons of mass destruction. Now, the Bush administration did lie, but people have the wrong lie. They had weapons of mass destruction, but they are weapons we had sold to Iraq when they were at war with Iran, and we didn't want to admit that the weapons we were warning people about were ours. It's been absolutely documented by Israeli intelligence, by the guy that was in charge of the Air Force under Saddam Hussein. And so this idea of Bush lied, people died, and even Trump's is on that bandwagon, too, of the Bush lied. So that needs to stop. Having said that, Bush was a mediocre president, and I don't like the fact that Jeb Bush is being a sore loser, and he won't take the very pledge that they forced Trump to take about supporting the candidate.
Yeah.
And he's not the only one.
That disappoints me. The spin is what's effective. So I'm hoping that there will be some momentum that will come out of this. And I'm amazed to hear myself saying this, but because I've been very, very cynical about Donald. I do like the fact that he speaks his mind, as you said, without a filter. And he says things that an awful lot of Americans really do embrace. And I think they like his candor. But and I like the fact that no one is buying him. There's nobody in his pockets because he's got money of his own and all of those things. But I don't know how truly conservative he is. I don't know what kind of president he will make. But I'm sorry I have to say this. It's better than the alternative.
Yeah, well, he's not a conservative. He's a populist. But he is surrounding himself with a lot of conservatives. So you never know. And we like the fact that he speaks without a filter. But then there's other times you listen to him, you go, a filter might have been helpful this time.
Well, JFK picked LBJ as his running mate so that he could pull in some of those votes that he was not going to get.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what he did, which means Trump's listening to somebody right now.
Yeah, that's old politics. There's nothing new about that.
But, what did you think of the FBI exonerating Hillary Clinton? Well, they didn't really exonerate her. They gave this list that indicted her and then said, but we're not going to prosecute
her. Why did you bring that up? You had to say that. I just threw up in my mouth.
But you know what? I think it seems to be backfiring because it's just reinforcing this idea that we're living under an unjust government. And I think it's sickening people so much, it's probably going to affect Hillary's campaign. So to answer your question, I think it will be a unified convention. I think it'll be a violent convention. I think Trump has a chance of winning, but only God knows what President Obama will do at that point. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.